Yeah, that is the theme tune from Breaking Bad. And I'm playing that because last week on the show, I mentioned I'm heading off on my holidays and I was on the hunt for TV show, movie and book recommendations. And I'm delighted to say that so many of you got onto me. So thank you very much for that. But Hillary sent a fantastic list of box sets, which included Breaking Bad. Other ones on the list that I haven't seen, The Americans, The Killing, she says the Danish version is better, The Bridge and 6 Feet Under. That is a fantastic list. I'm going to make my way through them. The other one that came in was Brian said The Gangs of London. A lot of Irish actors turn up in that. I haven't seen that at all. So I will add that to the list as well. Dave has been in touch and says some very nice things about the show. Thank you very much. He says, I've been living and working in Asia and Australia since around 1999. So I just hear you when I'm back in Dublin visiting the mother. Hello to Dave's mother. Hope you're well. He has two recommendations for me. So the first is the best series he's ever seen is called Mr. In Between. Fantastic. I'll have to give that a go. And then there's another book called Glamorama, which I just like saying anyway, Glamorama. So I will add that to the Kindle. Absolutely. It's written by Brett Easton Ellis. I'm just reading here now. It's a political thriller. Well, do you know what? Talking of political books, actually, I've been reading, or no, I haven't. I've been listening to the audiobook of The Original Sin, which is about Joe Biden and him deciding to run for re-election. And I guess the... what was known, what was speculated and what was denied in relation to his health and well-being as the election approached. It's infuriating to listen to be completely honest with you. It's very well researched, and I think the authors, Jake Tapper, and Alex Thompson, I think they said they spoke to over 200 people from like aides, opposition politicians, and they're just sharing what they saw and observed. And it's, yeah, it's an infuriating listen, I have to say. Now, obviously, on a human level, you do feel for Joe Biden and you wish him well with his various health challenges and so on. But it really does lead or pose a whole host of questions about the Democratic Party. And how we've ended up where we are. But please do keep your suggestions coming for things to read and watch over the next little while. I am not going to be on the email as much over the next 2 weeks, but I will keep an eye on it. So please do send any of the recommendations that you have in to techtalk@newstalk.com. We're now going to move on to something entirely different, and that relates to accessibility online. This is something that has been in the news over the last little while because the European Accessibility Act just came into force over the last few days. And from booking flights to buying an ebook, digital access is a huge part of all of our lives. This coming into force across the EU sets a new legal standard for making digital products and services much more accessible. To explain what it means in practical terms, I'm joined by Jo Joyce from Taylor Westing Ireland. Jo, it's great to have you on the show. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about this in the last few days. So for those who don't know anything about it, start at the very beginning. What is it and why is it needed?
Sure. So the European Accessibility Act is in fact a directive of the European Union, which is really important because it's not a regulation like the GDPR. And that'll be really important down the line because it means that each of the European Union's member states have to actually do things, pass their own legislation to bring it into force. Some of which were quite quick off the mark, others like us in Ireland, a bit slower, and a few still have some work to do. So a lack of clarity around actually what's going on with the law and enforcement in some parts of the EU is still an ongoing issue. But the directive was introduced really as part of the EU's overall kind of digital programme with a particular focus on consumers and making sure that individuals, wherever they are in the European Union, get the same access to goods and services and kind of the more exciting digital life that we can all lead in the modern world. There's a feeling that individuals with disabilities in the broader sense, so that those might be permanent disabilities, temporary disabilities, age-related conditions, even pregnancy-related conditions, those sorts of individuals might not be able to access markets for goods and services as consumers that that everybody else can. And that was both a terrible shame for them and also a bad thing for the EU market generally, because a healthy market means that everyone can get access and buy the things they want, enjoy the services that they like, and fully participate in the life of society.
And this is something that we've touched upon in the past on the programme with Vision Ireland, for example, and the accessibility of websites. But can you just paint, I suppose, a broader picture of what digital inaccessibility looks like, particularly in 2025 when, you know, service providers, retailers, everybody is pushing us to do our business online?
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. You know, some years ago, we would think about accessibility as, you know, does your shop have a ramp? Can people actually, you know, get physically into your building to buy the goods they want? But now we all live our lives so much online, and the ability to live our lives online is a really important thing for many people with disabilities. It gives them access to communities, services, jobs that they wouldn't have had even a few years ago. But that only really works to its fullest if people can actually access those services, and particularly when there's a world of technology out there to help people, you mentioned, you know, visually impaired people, but people with all sorts of disabilities to access digital services. But if actually websites and apps aren't having to act to make themselves compatible with those you know, brilliant tech innovations, then they may as well have not exist for a lot of people. We know that in the last census, 1.1 million people, I think, in Ireland said that they had a long-term impairment or disability of some sort. That's like 22% of our population. So it's you know, this isn't a trivial number of people. It's a huge number of people for whom, in some cases, significant, but in many cases, fairly kind of moderate changes can help them to access services. And that might mean that, okay, your website, you actually have to look at it and make sure that the text contrast is right, that the types of fonts that you're using, the way you're using images, the way you're setting things out are compatible with screen reader technology, which is literally just bits of tech that will read out a website for you and help you navigate it if you're either fully blind or just visually impaired. There's also, you know, expectations around if you have video content, you know, are there subtitles available, or is there a signing option for some individuals? And there's, you know, there's also an expectation that maybe if you need help using a website, if there's a help function, you ought to be able to speak to a person or potentially speak to an automated bot, but not have to type if actually typing is a challenge for you. So there are lots of different ways in which particularly consumer sites and apps can be made more accessible. Some of them require a reasonable amount of work, and others are actually quite small changes that can make a huge impact for people.
Yeah, an issue that has come up, somebody emailed me about it about 6 months ago, is that they have a slight visual impairment and they struggle with tech retailer websites. When you log on to the website, instantly you're met with a box that prompts you to put in your email address and get a discount. Then the cookies notification pops up, and there's an awful lot of things that, as somebody with full vision, I can easily swipe away, get rid of and move on. But for somebody else, can be a massive barrier. And that person in the email ended up having to go to another retailer because they physically couldn't navigate their way through the site.
Yeah, and that's a really recurring issue. It's interesting you mentioned cookie boxes, because, you know, in my work, I see a lot of questions and queries around cookies and boxes and pop-ups. And you know, they're a real challenge, because there are lots of things that you have to do to meet lots of different types of legal requirement as an online retailer. You have to have your privacy notice, you have to tell people about cookies, but you know, that doesn't mean that you can sort of lazily shove a thing in the middle of the screen and say, if you don't click through this, you can't access anything, you can't see what's going on. You know, we're going to make our buttons difficult to decipher by just color coding them rather than having clear text. There are all sorts of things that I'm afraid require just a bit more thought to make them accessible for everyone.
And so now, is there an obligation on businesses to address this themselves? Or what way does stuff like this come into play and come into practicality?
So the European Accessibility Act, which has been introduced into national law by the Irish government last year, is going to require businesses to really go through a whole bunch of steps to make sure that they're compliant and making their services as accessible as possible. Now, this doesn't apply to absolutely everything. For our purposes, it's going to be consumer websites and apps, so anywhere, where you can make a purchase as a consumer. It also really importantly applies to e-banking, and obviously having access to your banking is really important for everyone. And in a world where we're all doing our banking online, particularly in Ireland, where we're really kind of ahead of the game compared to some countries, it's extra important that actually that's accessible for everyone. And there are a few other things as well, like e-books and e-reader technology have to be compatible with the new legislation, as do smartphones, computers, smart TVs, ATM machines. It's not absolutely everything, but it's if you think about it, the EU has effectively said the things that you really need to operate through daily life in a way that means that you have the same choice as normal consumers, sorry, not normal consumers, but most consumers, is what we want to be covering in this legislation. And it means that there are going to be obligations for manufacturers, for service providers, but also for people importing goods into Ireland. If you are putting them on the market, it's your responsibility to make sure that they're accessible, even if you didn't manufacture them. I think that's really important because we do rely heavily on imported goods here, and so we have a right to assume that those are going to be safe, and not just safe but accessible, to the majority of our population. It's not a completely all-compassing piece of legislation, so there are a few exemptions. If you are a micro business, so if you have fewer than 10 employees and a turnover or a balance sheet of less than 2 million euro per year, then you won't have to comply with the requirements for services, and you'll receive some kind of leeway from the requirements for goods. And there are a few other kind of exemptions from kind of aspects of the legislation. But fundamentally, it is quite a big shift for a lot of organisations, not just to say that they are complying with the legislation and that they're doing things to be accessible, because actually lots of businesses have been working hard on this already. But there is a kind of an expectation that there'll be a lot more paperwork involved. As is often the case with compliance with EU legislation or EU derived legislation, there is work to do in record keeping. And you're going to have to make sure that where you have goods that require conformity assessments and other checks, that you actually go through the stages of making sure that that's been done, you've got the paperwork, and that if the regulator asks to see it, that you can demonstrate.
Are there going to be fines or penalties or naming and shaming of businesses that aren't fully compliant?
So yes, the expectation is that there'll be a relatively broad range of penalties on offer. So the regulator for most of the kind of goods and services that are in scope within Ireland is going to be the CCPA, the Competition and Consumer Protection Authority, and they will be effectively inviting consumers to provide their complaints and let them know if they're not happy with the accessibility levels of a particular service or product. And you can do that via their website. In advance of the legislation coming into force on Friday, they populated their website with lots more information and guidance, both for businesses but also for consumers to make complaints as necessary. So they will be interested in receiving complaints. They also have the right to proactively investigate businesses if they wish to. I'm not sure if they necessarily have the resource to do a lot of that yet. I suspect most of their work will be reactive following consumer complaints, but they will have the ability to really prevent businesses from putting goods on the market. There are potential fines available. In Ireland, unusually, we also have criminal penalties, which makes us stand out across the EU. I don't expect that many of those will be enforced. But technically, if you are putting a CE mark on a product, you now have to confirm that that product is accessible if it falls within the scope of the law, as well as meeting all the safety requirements to CE marking. And if you do that, and it's not, then you may well be subject to prosecution. So there are a whole range of penalties available. I don't expect us to see enormous fines of the sort that we saw under the GDPR. And in fact, the levels of fines available in Ireland will be much lower than that. But there is absolutely a risk of further action. And I suspect the naming and shaming element will probably be the most significant in this case, if you are particularly if you are claiming to be offering an accessible service, or you're offering a service which could quite easily be made accessible, or indeed a product which could quite easily be made accessible, and you're failing to do that because you haven't thought about your packaging, or you haven't thought about the contrast of your website, or you're doing things that make it difficult for people to navigate to where they need, then I suspect that will be quite embarrassing for some organisations.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that you mentioned the GDPR there, and since that has come into play, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, privacy by design and security by design, and which is fantastic. And I know from reading up on the EAA, they promote design for all. That seems to be a similar practice, that, you know, if you are a business starting out, or if you're bringing a new product to market, or whatever it may be, that you have that design for all concept ingrained in the DNA from the outset.
Completely. It's really important to be thinking about, you know, the very earliest stages of inception for a service or a product. You know, is this inherently inaccessible? If so, why? If it's not, if it can be made accessible, then what can you do to maximize that? And much like with privacy, we absolutely find that with accessibility, the earlier you think about these things, and if you embed it from the beginning, it's much easier and much cheaper as well to be compliant. It's really hard to reverse engineer accessibility into products that have not been designed that way. Sometimes it's a matter of straightforward changes on a website, but when you're talking about physical products and the way that they've been built and designed, that is much harder. So you really do need to think about it from the beginning. It's not necessarily easy, because the nature of adaptive technology and the ways in which tech can be made more accessible change over time. So something that would be within a designer's imagination in 10 years' time might not exist now. So it's not going to be a static thing. There will be, you know, it's not the case that as of now we've decided what is and isn't accessible. It's going to grow and change over time, and standards will shift and change. So it's something that businesses are always going to have to be aware of.
And you mentioned there that some businesses have been working on this for quite some time, but for those who haven't, or perhaps a business that is potentially on the smaller side or could potentially be exempt but wants to get involved and wants to ensure that their products and services are more accessible, is there a centralized resource hub that people can go and get information and get guidance and so on?
I would say one of the challenges of kind of looking at and advising on the EAA is that there has been far less guidance and support available than would be the case with other bits of legislation. I think it's gone a bit under the radar. It's great people are talking about it so much now, but I've been sort of sadly in a lonely fashion writing articles about this for some years. And for a long time, it was really hard to find anyone else talking about it. That's thankfully not the case anymore, but I think a lot of businesses could be forgiven for sort of not really having understood that this was something that would apply to them. As a result, I think there's a lack of really good centralised information, although I will say as of the last few days, the CCPA has put a lot more information for businesses up on its website. There's not an awful lot at EU level, and if you happen to be selling products or services into other EU markets, there may be more support available. So there's quite a lot available in Germany and in the Netherlands as well. And because this is a directive and not a regulation, you can't be totally certain, I'm afraid, that the work that you're doing in Ireland will be necessarily sufficient or the same as would be required by other EU countries. So if you have a big market somewhere else, even if you're a relatively small entrant, I would definitely say have a look at what's going on there and take some advice in relation to that. But there is an awful lot that businesses can do just right now. There are some standards that have existed for a long time, the Web Accessibility Standards, or WCAG standards, which are sort of the benchmark really for most websites and apps. They get you about 95% of the way there. And when it comes to product design, there is perhaps a slightly, trickier, thing to do. And in that case, it's really a matter of making sure that you are speaking to accessibility experts, and that your team and your designers have been trained to think about these issues from the beginning. I think it would be great if there was more resource available at EU level and there was a bit more harmony on this. At the moment, I think you will be forgiven for not having things done perfectly, but making the effort. And so having a look at your site, doing a bit of an audit if you're your website operator, looking at your products if you're manufacturing or importing goods, and actually speaking to everyone else that's involved in kind of the kind of delivery and supply chain of all of that, to make sure that everyone is pulling in the same direction is really important. There will definitely be more guidance and more support available over the next couple of years. So I think it's not the case that if you can't find what you're looking for now, sort of throw up your hands and despair and give up. But I do think that it's going to become an increasingly important area because people will expect it and have a right to. So I think if there isn't informational guidance available, pester the regulator, pester the CCPA, and say, "What do I do in this situation? What's expected?" Because they have the ability to produce guidance. They've done so for micro businesses already, and so they can absolutely do so in other areas if it's needed.
Brilliant stuff. Well, get started, do an audit, and ask for help if you need it. That is some good advice. Jo Joyce, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Jess.
Yeah, that was Jo Joyce, Head of Regulatory IP and Digital at Taylor Wessing Ireland. I would love to hear your experiences. Have you encountered, like that email I referenced, unaccessible or inaccessible websites or services or products? You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, when we come back after the break, we have something a little bit different.
I, the AI clone of Jess, will take you on a tour of AI audio and explain why you should be cautious about what you hear.